I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moore!
Rugby Weekly.
Little reverse pass, and
hello everybody and welcome to your Friday episode of the 42 Rugby Weekly. We are approaching Wales Week. We've got a big weekend of URC on the horizon as well. It's Gavin Casey with you here, and joining me to look ahead to the next week or so is Kieran Kennedy of the 42, who was just over with the Ireland camp. Kieran, firstly, how are you doing?
I'm mighty, Gav. Yeah, all good. Busy enough morning out there today, but yeah, all good. Enjoying the fact that it's a break week and we've a bit more time off this weekend. It's been pretty hectic start to the championship, and once it gets going, it just feels like it's something happening kind of every minute almost. All good here.
Are you working this weekend?
I am not working this weekend. No, our very kind bosses decided that a break week in the Six Nations should mean a break week for the journalists. So I'm going to the Aviva on Sunday for the Bow Shamrock Rovers game. So it's kind of a week off, but I'm still going to the Aviva to watch matches. So, look, I'll take it.
100%. What was the mood like over in Aberystwyth, Kieran?
Felt like a break week, Gav, if I'm being honest. I guess for any of our, like, lots of our listeners wouldn't have ever been out there before. So the way it kind of works is the IRFU are based kind of in the facility where the indoor pitch is, which is just kind of connected to the main kind of Sports Ireland campus facility. So there's a lot of different things going on there. There's a cafe, there's an indoor track, there's different meeting rooms, there's kind of badminton courts and all this sort of stuff. So generally when we're out there, the place is pretty much a hive of activity. There could be underage football teams knocking around. Even just last week, we were going up to the press conference and Charlene Mosley was out on the track doing a bit of training, and there might be different people in IRFU or Leinster suits or whatever meeting, having a chat in the cafe. And yeah, there's lots going on, but it was very, very quiet today. It kind of felt like we were almost the only people around. So it felt very different, yeah. And the Ireland team have had a bit of a different week. They had a bit of extra time off at the start of the week. And I think then the idea for the last couple of days has just been to do something a bit different and keep things kind of fresh and energetic. So they had Brian Fenton in for a couple of hours with the squad yesterday. And then today they trained against the under 20s, which is something that happens every year. And previously it's something I think that's got a little bit tasty between the two teams, but I think everybody was a little bit more well behaved this time around from the sounds of it. So yeah, a few different things going on. And I suppose the main news out of it was that Caelan Doris sat out training, which Alan Walters, the IRFU's kind of head of athletic performance, he pretty much played it down after delivering that news, saying that he's just got a couple of bangs and bruises after the opening two games. So I think they're kind of more managing his workload more than anything. It didn't sound like anything that was a major doubt. We didn't get any more clarity on it really. So it'll be one to just kind of watch and follow up on next week. Joe McCarthy and Matt Hansen were the good news. They both trained fully this week and they're on course to play against Wales. Sounds like Tadhg Furlong won't make it. They said they'll make that decision next week, but kind of just by the sounds of it and from what we've heard the last few weeks, I don't think he'll be rushed back to play against Wales, and maybe France in round four is a little bit more likely. So so busy enough out there today.
We're in privileged positions, of course, to have such access to a sporting institution, and when you're out in Abbottstown on a particularly busy day, it is cool to just bump into Olympians that are preparing for a Europeans or a Worlds, particularly as somebody who has written and followed boxing for so long, just like bumping into Kelly Harrington or something like that. But should be noted, there are days when you're out there when it's pretty shit. And it sounds like it was one of those, very quiet on the news front. I would imagine Caelan Doris will be fine if indeed he is selected to start next week. Let's see how all of that goes. On the flip side of it, Kieran, I was keen to chat to you about Wales. And not so much what they've done so far in the Six Nations, which unfortunately is very little from their point of view, but what they might look like in a week's time with Matt Sherritt at the helm, and I guess some of the changes that they may make for that game. But to begin with, I'd imagine there are a lot of listeners who wouldn't be necessarily au fait with Sherritt or what he will be looking to bring to the setup. What do you know about him as a coach and how he goes about his business?
Yeah, he's going to be very different to Warren Gatland. And like, it's obviously not going to be a long-term project for him. He's kind of said that he just wants to do these three games and then he'll be out. So it'll be interesting to see, I suppose, how much impact he can actually have. But yeah, he's very different to Warren Gatland. He's primarily an attack coach. So for people who don't know too much about him, he's actually English. So I think he's kind of technically the first English coach that head coach that Wales have ever had. So that's just another little tidbit, I guess. But yeah, he kind of came through. He worked for kind of development roles in English rugby. He worked at the Worcester Warriors Academy. He's been running the attack at Bristol previously, at Ospreys, and then into Cardiff. And Cardiff ended up being his first head coach job. And that was only 2 years ago. Before the rugby took off from, he was a teacher. And I think when you hear about coaches who are teachers, you always hear one or two things. It's always, well, he was a teacher, so he's a disciplinarian and he's strict and, you know, he goes by the rules. Or it's that, oh yeah, he's a people person and he's an educator and he's able to kind of captivate a group. And he seems to be the latter. You very much hear that he is a people person, and kind of the, I suppose, the environment and the atmosphere around the squad is something that would be very important to him. And I guess I'd be interested to just see how he approaches this opportunity. Like, it's obviously come at him out of the blue. And even just looking at him sitting in the WRU press conference on Tuesday, wasn't it? He was actually still in his Cardiff rugby tracksuit, which is maybe not a great look if you're trying to say that, you know, you've got everything under control here. Surely somebody could have just thrown him a Wales jacket before he entered the room. But yeah, look, he runs the attack and that's going to be a big focus for him. I was reading something with Sam Warburton the other day, and Warburton said that he talks about the attack in more detail than any other attack coach he had ever had. So by the sounds of it, he's going to come in looking to just energize things around that attack a little bit. And maybe it's things like starter plays and kind of phase attack, just little tweaks that he might add in there, because it's a massive challenge, isn't it? Straight up going in against Ireland. You can't be going in with the kind of, like, Cardiff would be a very entertaining team to watch, I would say. They play lots of nice attack and rugby, but at the same time, their defence is a little bit suspect. Like, they're fifth in the URC table, and he's definitely done a really good job in terms of lifting them, because, as he said himself, they were at a pretty low ebb when he came in there. I think they'd finished 12th even in his first season. But yeah, they're fifth at the moment, but I would read that league position as perhaps being a bit deceptive. You know, they're the only team in the top five in the URC that still have a negative points difference, so they're minus 35 point differential at the moment. They also still have to play Leicester, they still have to play Munster, they have to go away to the Bulls and the Stormers, and they've already taken some pretty heavy beatings along the way. Glasgow put 52 points on them. The Sharks put over 40 points on them. I think Connacht scored about 27 or 28 points as well. So they're not the most balanced team. And maybe that's going to be one of the challenges he has with this Wales side, because obviously defence has been a problem for them. Despite all the kind of the work rate and the spirit we've seen in the first two performances, their defence has been porous. So he can maybe come in and freshen things up and add a bit of energy. But if you're looking for, I suppose, a bounce, you're going to need a pretty big bounce to make the kind of difference they need to make before facing Ireland.
As you know, he is an Englishman, and after taking a role with England Rugby at the start of his coaching career, he was with Worcester, with whom he was an academy coach, then on to Bristol, backs coach. And I'm not sure if he's from Gloucester, but he went to the University of Gloucester. So all of these areas are almost Wales adjacent. He's not so much a blow-in, or wasn't when he started with Cardiff in 2016. There's huge overlap, even in terms of schools, players. Like, you think of guys who go to Gloucester, to Harperley College, excuse me. So he would have been in tune with the Welsh game, I'd imagine, even when he was involved with England and some of those English clubs. And like, the question that I would have going into next week is, to what extent can he materially impact this Welsh team? To what extent can he actually make them a more fundamentally watchable and decent team than they have been? Because I went back over the game against Italy for my sins, and I really don't want to talk about it, but it is a podcast. So, like, one of the things that really stood out was just how insanely bad their attacking shape was, and particularly off second phase. So, like, their depth of positioning in attack was genuinely the worst I've ever seen from any test team. And I know the conditions were difficult, and the Italian line speed was decent as well. To a degree, maybe with the conditions, there was a sense of suffocation about it, but it was just so again, fundamentally wrong by Wales. I couldn't believe it. Like, these are good rugby players. It's not a great Welsh team, we know, but like, these are good professional rugby players who've made it to test level. And like, you had situations in which Thomas Williams, the scrum half, was picking the ball out of the base of a ruck, and like, the second forward pod wasn't even formed yet. So like, when Wales were reloading, whatever they had planned to do wasn't actually in motion yet, or rather, it was still in motion. It wasn't ready to go. It's just like, so, I don't want to sound like off the ball here, but it was so amateurish to watch, like, that it was jarring. And that's where I think the answer to the question as to whether Matt Sherrick can materially impact this team is yes, absolutely. Because of his background, Kieran, as we say, where he's been an attack coach or a backs coach for the majority of his career, and he's turned Cardiff, for example, into an entertaining team to watch. The rest of it, like defence, I don't know. Like, Wales have conceded 133 points in their last three games against, let's call them, World Cup semi-final tier opposition. And as it transpires like that, or as it transpired in 2023, that's probably been kind to Ireland, France and Australia, actually. But you know what I mean? Sort of top five or six teams in the world. And they're not scoring much either. Like, for example, I'm giving out about their second phase attack against Italy. Their first phase attack was abysmal. I think Sam Warburton, he was certainly the person who, or from whom I'm going to rob the stat. They had 13 first phase attacks in the first half against Italy, and they made an aggregate of 1 meter. So there's a lot to fix, but I think within the space of 10 days, a guy with a good attacking brain can fix a lot of it. And Kieran, I'm curious then as to what you make of, say, his call-ups of Max Llewellyn, but maybe more pertinently, Gareth Anscombe and Jared Evans, because we've seen Ben Thomas playing it out half in these first two games. He's played maybe 60-odd career games, 70-odd career games. I think he started 9 of them at out half, and most of those were at club level, naturally enough. Is this a case to your mind where you draft in Anscombe to start him, and does he actually assist in reshaping that Welsh attack? What do you make of that call by Sherrick?
Yeah, that's 100% what I would be anticipating, all right. And just even on the point that you're kind of making there, to go back to the attack in general, I think this Wales team, when you look at them, maybe suits Sherrick better than it would have Warren Gatland. Like, you think of Warren Gatland, you still think of physicality, big defensive effort, lots of grit. He didn't have the players for that. He didn't have the big kind of beefy ball carriers you need for that, and the guys like a George North or an Alan Wynne-Jones for that. So that's totally where I would anticipate the impact to be most notable. And that's why I think Anscombe's going to come straight into the team, because once you can bring that bit of experience straight in, like, you're bringing it into a squad that at the moment look like they just need a steadying hand. So in that aspect, it makes perfect sense. There was a bit of a surprise that he wasn't in the squad initially, but at that point, like, Warren Gatland was still kind of future planning. He spoke about the fact that Anscombe will be 36 at the next World Cup, so he wanted to get more experience into his younger tens. And now, he didn't close the door on Anscombe, but ultimately he wasn't the man who got to make the call of whether he was going to feature in this Six Nations or not. But yeah, I think it's a sensible move. And I mean, straight away you would feel Wales are a stronger team for his presence. And of course, like, it's been really difficult for Ben Thomas, but like, it's Sherrick that's coaching him at Cardiff, and he hasn't been playing him at 10. He's been playing him at 12. So I'd be really surprised if he decided that he was going to be his 10 at test level. You add that bit of experience in and just try to steady things a little bit and maybe sprinkle in some of those kind of starter plays we've seen him kind of use with Cardiff. But like, the thing with all of this is really, like, yes, these changes should give Wales some kind of a lift for the Ireland game, but, and you would imagine there'll be a bit more just energy around the principality as well, given that, you know, something different is coming and that everybody knows they need a bit of a bounce. But like, at the end of the day, Ireland are still, they still should be on another level to this Welsh side at the moment. I still feel like it's going to be a very difficult remainder of the Six Nations for Wales, no matter what Sherrick's able to come in and do. And like, he's not staying on. So really for Wales, like, getting the next appointment right is just so, so important, because the problem for the WRU is that, like, well, one of the many problems that they've created for themselves is that the job isn't as attractive as it once was. So it's vacant at a time, but there's a couple of other really big club jobs available, and even test jobs with the likes of Australia later this year. So they might not have a very big pool to choose from at a time where it feels like they sort of need a savior. And I guess I'm only saying that because I thought it was interesting the chair was so quick to say he doesn't want the job full time, because I don't know where they're going to turn to after that. It'll be really difficult for him to make the impact they need to stop this Six Nations being a total disaster, really, over the next few weeks. You're looking for small kind of wins, and to kind of get that lift within a week. Like, he's still coaching Cardiff this week, then he's going back into Wales to try do the changes that he'll need to do for Ireland next week. It's going to be really tough. They should have more energy. There should be more of a lift around things, a bit of fight in them and all, but really it's just a horrible Six Nations for them, really. And the worry would be that there might be a couple more of them ahead of them, I guess.
That's where it sort of surprised me to see Simon Easterby's name even tentatively or speculatively in the frame for the job on a full-time basis, because as much as, yes, he has strong connections to Wales, he obviously came through at Llanelli, and his wife is Welsh, his in-laws are Welsh. It's just such a toxic environment into which to go for a job, and such an unbelievably difficult job that it's difficult to imagine any coach coming out of it in a year or 5 years' time with their reputation enhanced. Little bit maybe like Lee Carsley in the soccer, where he was linked to the Republic of Ireland manager's job. And I was like, why would you do that? Like, from such an advantageous position from which you can really launch something, it doesn't feel like a good idea. I could be proven wrong there, although he's going to cost a lot of money to prize out of his IRFU contract as well. I agree with you, like, that they will get a sugar rush here, as is always the case. New manager bounce, and Sherratt, who is a teacher, incidentally, will have a bit of a sub-teacher vibe to him, in the sense that the old regime is gone. I don't think there was any real personal fallouts there. It's just sometimes there is a kind of a rot that sets in, right? Or even a stasis almost, where it's just like, this is going nowhere, and it's difficult for lads to get up for the mundanities of it. He'll bring that little bit of a bounce. And I think the first 20 minutes, Wales are going to absolutely tear into Ireland, and it's going to look like it's going to be a competitive game. I just, as you noted, I don't really think they have the players to maintain that. They may be able to stretch it a little bit when they watch Gerard Gilroy on the lads, which they undoubtedly will. I honestly think that maybe narrows the handicap slightly, because how could you watch that and not be... inspired with hatred? I mean, as a Welshman, to be clear. But yeah, it's just difficult to make the case for them. I suppose the case we are making, Ciarán, is just that maybe it will be a little bit more of a difficult game for Ireland than we would have anticipated a week ago, and that there are a couple of challenges here that will be very different looking to what Wales had produced so far. I presume you're still sort of expecting a pretty significant Irish victory.
You would have to, based on what we've seen from both teams over the first two weekends. What I think maybe will be interesting with it is how this change impacts how Ireland approach things. If it just makes them a little bit more cautious towards making a couple of changes that they might have been tempted to make, and just because we've seen previously where we get to that game, and be it in the Six Nations or in November, where you get a couple of changes in the team. It's one of those weeks where, you know, supporters are excited because you get to see players who maybe haven't got their chance get their chance. And then that little bit of cohesion or fluidity is just not quite there in the team. So if there's a risk of that happening, is that risk now heightened with the fact that we expect it to be a bit of a different Wales challenge next week? So I wonder if I'm somebody like, say, Jamie Osborne playing at 15 for Leinster this weekend and thinking maybe, you know, I have a chance of coming in and making a bit of an impact with Ireland next week. Are your chances just cut that little bit? Is there going to be just a little bit more caution in the way the selectors go and the number of changes they're going to make? That's maybe an interesting point of it from the Ireland side of things. But at the same time, with the pool they have at the minute, with the form they are at the minute, you would certainly think they can make a few changes. And yeah, probably even, as you say, just even outlast them if they have a strong bench. Like, it would take a real off day for Ireland to go to Cardiff at the moment and struggle. I do think they could get maybe a bit of a sticky start and Wales could come out firing and everything like that. But in terms of what we're seeing on the pitch, in terms of the way Ireland are playing at the minute, like, you couldn't see anything other than an Ireland win, really. That's not quite going full, you know, inspiring hatred from any Welsh listeners there, but there's a word of caution to it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's going to be an absolute landslide by any stretch of the imagination. I just find it hard to believe that a Wales team with a new coach and imbued by that sense of freshness won't stand up to be counted. And they did against France, right? Like, I know they didn't score.
It did. And I suppose the other way you could look at it is if Sherrod manages to give this team a proper boost and beat Ireland next week, you're looking at one of the all-time great Six Nations wins, you know, realistically. So, yeah, it's just a shame because this has generally been such an exciting game over the last, or like, you know, historically Ireland-Wales has been one of the great Six Nations games. And now we're talking about it as if it is like the Italy game where you make your changes, you still anticipate a win. Like, that's not really what we want at all. You know, we want Wales to be competitive and we want these to be really great competitive test games. Like, hopefully it is next week, but at the moment I just don't see that.
Yeah, no, that's debatable, but I take your point. Well, at least Italy are competitive. No, I'm joking. Yeah, best of luck to the Welsh, and we'll see how we go next week. You mentioned that Ireland may need to lean into that cohesion a little bit more against what could be a sterner Welsh test. Munster have plenty of that against the Scarlets of Welsh region at Thomond Park on Saturday, in the sense that they've only brought in Josh Wycherley to their starting 15. Same team otherwise as beat the Dragons on the 25th of January, I think that was. So Wycherley comes in for Dion Bleuler, is obviously departed. And otherwise, Munster's 15 are unchanged, or is unchanged, and a little bit of a more experienced bench with Niall Scannell on there as well. Munster, this is where defeats to, say, Zebra prove costly. And I'm blue in the face from saying it on the pod, not just of them, but of the provinces generally, that games at the very start of the season, whether it's week 1, 2, or 3, are worth the exact same as weeks 14, 15, 16. And this is why I would say Munster are taking no chances really with the selection that is available to them. They need 5 points here, and whether or not they get that, we'll find out on Saturday. I wanted to ask you though, Kieran, about Ulster, because they've made more changes in, and they probably look... yeah, I would say like the complexion of this Ulster team is very different now, because you've got three of the main guys back in that back line. You've got Jacob Stockdale on the left wing. You've got Stuart McCluskey inside centre, partnered in midfield by James Hume, who we've been really looking forward to seeing back for a long time. Three of them came back in that narrow defeat to Les Kiss's Reds last week. I suppose that the theme of this pod has been material difference. And I wonder how much this could change what Ulster look like in the coming weeks, or what they're able to do. What do you reckon?
Yeah, massive to have them back. And Hume, like, he's a player that, you know, has made a positive impact with Ireland, and that hopefully we'll be talking about in an Ireland context again before too long. But having those guys back just gives you that chance of building that bit of consistency again, because I suppose for Munster, Ulster and Connacht, really, it's that consistency has just been such a problem over the year. And you're dead right. Like, those games that prove costly at the start of the season, it's the same thing with this time of the season. These URC games, like, they don't get the same amount of attention. They don't sell the same amount of tickets. They don't get as many viewers on TV. And like, even we're guilty of it to an extent, because we've spent most of this podcast talking about Wales, and we're going to give the URC just a couple of minutes at the end. But getting your points on the board at this time of the season is just as important. And like, we've seen it with the provinces over the last couple of years, like how important a point or two can be when it comes down to the final table. So yeah, these games are all massive, and they're massive games for Munster, Ulster and Connacht, I think, this weekend, and big opportunities. But yeah, Hume is like, he's just a fantastic player, and he's been out for so long, and he's so important to what Ulster do and what he brings to that back line, that you'd love to see him come back in and just hit those levels straight away again. But given the nature of the injury he had, there's also going to have to be a little bit of patience, really. And you would imagine it will take him a couple of weeks to properly get back up to speed and into the full rhythm of things. But he can be a difference maker for them, absolutely. And to be able to name a centre partnership of Hume and McCloskey, like, the more Ulster are able to do that in a back line that has Jacob Stockdale in it for the rest of the season, you know, the better their chances, obviously. So it's keeping these guys fit and being able to get them in your team week in, week out, and just trying to get some, yeah, just consistency in performance and translating that into results, because it's going to be a massive finish. They need a massive finish to the season, really.
It will take them a while to get up to speed with certain elements of the game, for certain. And then you kind of look at the fact that it's McCloskey partnering him. And in attack, at least, then it's difficult to imagine him not being really effective, just because McCloskey almost gives you no option but to break the line, just with the way he can hold the ball over a defender's head, just pop that offload. So it's perfect timing that the both of them are back in tandem, and an exciting prospect for Ulster for sure. They're away to Benetton, who are obviously really afflicted by international call-ups, more so than probably any other club outside of Leinster in the ORC. So no excuses for Ulster. You've just got to get this job done. Their team is a lot stronger than Benetton's on paper. Going to the Monigo is a little bit of a leveler, but as you say, critical game, got to get the job done. Connacht are in a similar boat. They're third from bottom in the table, Ciarán, but they've named an extremely strong looking team for tomorrow's game as well. And Hugh Gavin will start at 13, which is a cool one, against Cardiff. A midfield partnership of Cathal Ford and Hugh Gavin, who hasn't played in 3 months himself. How exciting a prospect is that for Connacht fans, or perhaps even Irish rugby fans?
Massively. And he hasn't played for 3 months, and it's also his first start of the season. He's played twice already, but they were both off the bench. So it's a big opportunity for him. And it's kind of like what you were saying with Hume coming back in from injury and playing alongside McCloskey. The fact that he's going into what looks a fairly strong, experienced Connacht team should benefit him and help him kind of settle into the game, and hopefully we get to see like the quality that we like. He's one of those young players who we kind of keep talking about in terms of potential, and we haven't had a chance to properly see him get a run in the team. So you want to see him just kick on, push in, start really pushing for a place and challenging for a place, and showing the kind of the talent we saw from the Ireland under 20s last year. He's a hugely exciting prospect. So yeah, I just hope that it's like, again, it's like Ulster. This is a massive game for Connacht. They need to be getting points on the board. If they can do that and get a bit of a glimpse of the quality Hugh Gavin can potentially offer to the team, it'll be a good weekend.
He's taken every step forward so far with aplomb where he's had the opportunity. So as you mentioned, the 20s, one of the standout players of last year's championship, the emerging Ireland tour as well, just looked powerful. And in the glimpses we've seen of him in Connacht's senior team, equally so, which is always exciting when you're talking about a young guy stepping up to senior level, where that ascent in terms of physicality is massive, and he seems to have been able to withstand that. So it's just so exciting to see him get a chance from the start. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to all three games, actually, tomorrow. By the time this podcast comes out, Leinster will have practically played the Ospreys. We're recording a little bit later, obviously, with the fact that you were over in Abbottstown. So we'll swing back to that on Monday, I'm sure, with Birch and Murray, and see how they get on. For the moment, though, Ciarán, I'll let you get back to it, because I know you have a busy one there.
Yeah, a couple of interviews to write up. Who else did we speak today? Gary Ringrose, Tadhg Byrne. Two very happy players who have signed new contracts this week. So a few things to dig into here, and we'll have it all on the 42 over the weekend.
Magic. Good man. Great to see you. Thanks a million for that.
Thanks, Gav.
Thank you to everyone at home as well. It's the 42.ie/subscribe if you want to get those additional podcasts, Mondays, Wednesdays, Ireland post-match as well during the Six Nations, the 42.ie/subscribe. Have a great weekend, everybody, and mind yourselves. Take it easy. Put the boys in a better land. You're always talking about the boys in a better land. The boys in a better land. Drivers got names for their two double barrels.